Even though we had a common saying among the cadets, among my friends, that if you kill a terrorist, you create two more. And it's that fundamental misunderstanding of terrorism and where it comes from that I think is continuing to fuel this fire. It almost permits terrible acts to be committed against people who are even marginally connected to terrorism. And you see that word being thrown around, being used to describe people who just want Palestinians to have human rights. So my journey to get to that point of thinking was a pretty long one. I had to tear down, first of all, my definition of terrorism. I had to tear down the propaganda that I had been fed, that terrorists just kind of hate us because of who we are. I had to learn a lot. I had to supplement my understanding of the US's place in the global world order
We have 10 seconds, Joy.
with history, based on, the oppression of the US military and regions. So that's really how I got to where I am now.
I want to thank you both for being with us. I want to thank Lieutenant Joy Metzler, active duty Air Force Lieutenant seeking conscientious objector status, and Levi Pierpont, who is a conscientious objector, a friend of Aaron Bushnell. They met at Air Force basic training in Texas. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m., KBOO makes everything metal. The Metal March returns again in 2025, featuring 10 hours of live bands and DJ sets from your favorite KBOO metal hosts. March 4th and support metal on KBOO. Text KBOO to 44321 or go to kboo.fm/give to donate and tune in to the Metal March Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Metal takes over the airwaves for the Metal March Metal Marathon, only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the KBOO Evening News, Portland City Council is likely to approve an over $900,000 police settlement for journalists and legal observers. Oregon lawmakers consider adding wildlife crossings to the state transportation package, and a new study shows how the workforce suffers when abortion restrictions take effect. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 4th, 2025. I'm Dave Johnson. Portland City Council is expected to approve a settlement of over $900,000 for journalists and legal observers who were targeted by Portland police during the racial justice protests in 2020. Journalists and legal observers filed a lawsuit on June 28th, 2020. In it, They detail how Portland police shot them with rubber bullets, sprayed them with tear gas and pepper spray, beat them with batons, targeted them with flashbangs, and in some cases, arrested them. Journalists and legal observers have a First Amendment right to gather information on a protest, even when police are trying to disperse a crowd. The proposed settlement would require Portland to keep policies in place to protect journalists and legal observers during protests in the future, until at least 2028. Portland has paid out more than $3.3 million to resolve claims against the Portland Police Bureau since 2020. Wildlife vehicle collisions are a significant issue in Oregon, costing lives and money. Legislation in Salem would direct the state to create wildlife crossings as part of a transportation package. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
New legislation would help build more wildlife crossings across Oregon highways to make roads safer for people and animals. Research shows that Oregon has the highest likelihood of wildlife crashes among West Coast states, with nearly 5,000 damaging or deadly collisions in 2022. Wildlife collisions are costly and dangerous for drivers and take their toll on wildlife as well. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife estimates that nearly 15 million animals are killed on Oregon's roads each year. Carl J. Findling is on the board for the Oregon Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. He says it's time for Oregon to do more to address the problem.
Oregon is behind nearly all Western states with only five and a potentially new sixth crossing, where some states like Colorado have 50.
Crossings have been shown to significantly reduce wildlife collisions. For example, an underpass near Bend cut them by more than 85%. Findling says that along with driving population declines in many species, when you factor in medical and vehicle repair costs, collisions with wildlife are pricey.
I've seen numbers around $7,000 per collision with a deer, but what's striking is $73,000 when someone hits an elk.
Although polls show wildlife crossings have broad bipartisan support across the state, Findling says funding wildlife crossings remains a challenge due to high costs. The first wildlife overcrossing along the West Coast's Interstate 5 is just north of the California border and cost about $30 million to build. But, says Findling, with all the money they save, crossings pay for themselves within 15 years.
When we see these crossings go in, the returns are close to $3 for every dollar invested.
The bill currently in Salem would push the issue higher up on the state's priority list, in part by directing the Oregon Department of Transportation to seek federal funding to install and maintain wildlife crossings. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
President Trump removed Gwynne Wilcox from the National Labor Relations Board on January 27th after serving only 2.5 years of her 5-year term. There are just two remaining members on the 5-member board, leaving the NLRB without a quorum of at least 3 members. That means the board can't make significant decisions about U.S. labor disputes. The Coalition of Attorneys General filed an amicus brief in Wilcox versus Trump, including Oregon's Attorney General Dan Rayfield. The appeal seeks to return Wilcox as the chair of the NLRB. Rayfield says, quote, "The disruption caused by this action not only harms employees, but it undermines the rule of law and how our democracy works. This is a clear attack on workers' rights and ensuring fair labor practices," end quote. Board members are Senate approved for set terms and may only be removed for, quote, "neglect of duty or malfeasance." Rayfield and the state's attorney general assert the Trump administration damaged American workers' rights and their ability to join a labor union and engage in collective bargaining. These workers' rights, protected for decades, give the NLRB the authority to investigate violations of labor laws, adjudicate labor disputes, and certify the results of union elections. There are currently 452 cases of unfair labor practices pending in the state of Oregon alone. The American Federation of Teachers and the American Sociological Association have filed a lawsuit over a letter sent by the U.S. Department of Education warning schools against certain policies or curriculum based on race. The letter had schools scrambling to decide how to handle the threat of funding cuts for noncompliance. Suzanne Potter has the details in California.
The American Federation of Teachers and the American Sociological Association are suing the Trump administration over a threat of funding cuts and investigations of schools that integrate diversity, equity, and inclusion into their policies or lessons. The letter schools received purports to reinforce anti-discrimination laws, but casts efforts to hire or help disadvantaged people of color as a form of discrimination. Roderick Castro, assistant superintendent of Santa Rosa City Schools, notes the letter criticizes using race as a factor in hiring and training.
A letter like this is basically giving them a directive to abandon those. That cuts us off at the knees. We're looking for educators to be more representative of the students that are in the classroom. It's a blow, more of a gut punch to us.
The letter is critical of courses that involve certain racial groups. Castro says ethnic studies classes rightly lift up students' cultural heritage, and he thinks teachers and students should be free to examine the facts about topics like slavery or civil rights. Schools were given until last Friday to comply with the Trump administration's anti-DEI directive, and many colleges are pulling back, even reevaluating campus groups like the Black Student Union. Dr. Chuck Flores teaches social justice and educational leadership at Cal State LA.
We have to provide an open forum for all people of all races to discuss what it is that we need to achieve as a country. Eliminating DEI doesn't go in that direction. I just feel that we're going down a dark hole we're not going to be able to pull out of if people don't wake up and start taking a stand for what's right.
The letter from the Department of Education also says diversity and social justice are not valid reasons to take race or a proxy for race into account for admissions and financial aid. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Early research is starting to come together that looks at how abortion bans affect where people choose to live and work. The latest findings suggest that it could become harder to attract and retain workers in states where bans have surfaced since a landmark U.S. Supreme Court ruling. Mike Mohn reports from South Dakota.
The 2022 U.S. Supreme Court decision to overturn federal abortion protections continues to be felt. New research now suggests states that have since enacted bans, including South Dakota, will see fewer workers because of these moves. The Institute for Women's Policy Research is out with a new study that includes survey data from 10,000 adults. The authors say one in five respondents planning to have children has moved or know someone who has to another state because of reproductive care restrictions in their current location. The Institute's Melissa Mahoney says it shows banned states will likely see some of their workforce talent flow elsewhere.
The labor markets in states that protect abortion tend to be more welcoming for women with higher wages, greater access to health insurance, also a stronger labor force participation.
These findings mirror results from a similar study issued earlier this year by the National Bureau of Economic Research. After the Dobbs ruling, when conservative states began enacting bans, officials like former Governor Kristi Noem pledged their support for pregnant women and children. But policy analysts say Noem's record often fell short in that area. Mahoney says their research indicates it isn't just a problem for state policymakers. She notes that businesses should also be worried about a talent drain, with survey respondents wanting them to prioritize care access.
Many, in addition, are asking more of their employers in terms of reproductive health care benefits, in terms of speaking out against abortion restrictions in their states.
According to the findings, 57% of respondents say they're more likely to apply for or accept a job with reproductive health care benefits as part of the offer. And in South Dakota, 65% of adults think employers should provide financial assistance for child care. This is Mike Mohn for Greater Dakota News Service.
Trump administration puts 25% tariffs on Mexico and Canada. New York wants newly fired federal workers for state service, and the GAO's high-risk report finds ways to make the government more efficient. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vera with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
No room left for Mexico or for Canada. No, the tariffs, you know, they're all set. They go into effect tomorrow.
After a month's delay, President Donald Trump says 25% tariffs on Mexican and Canadian imports are going into effect. In response, he says, to illegal immigration and fentanyl smuggling. Leaders from America's largest trading partners tried hammering out a last-minute deal, but Trump says time has run out. The stock market fell dramatically on the news. Trump has also suspended all U.S. military aid to Ukraine. Meanwhile, Israel has stopped shipment of humanitarian aid into Gaza. A fragile ceasefire is holding, but planned negotiations on next steps are stalled. Trump is expected to discuss many of these issues in a speech to a joint session of Congress tonight. While it's not a State of the Union, the administration says it will help explain the administration's frantic early pace. Billionaire Elon Musk is expected to be present in the chamber, though Democrats are inviting federal workers Musk and Trump have fired. With so many facing the axe, New York says a new You're Hired campaign will help fill more than 12,000 state government vacancies with unemployed federal workers. After a roundtable with fired federal employees, Governor Kathy Hochul said Trump and Musk are using real lives as fodder for a cheap second-rate reality show.
They fail to recognize that they're affecting people's real lives and their livelihoods. These are essential jobs requiring many years of specialized experience done by real people, as I said, with bills to pay and families to support. They should be commended for their service, not mocked by the president and handed a pink slip.
Musk's advisory group, the Department of Government Efficiency, plans to cancel leases for two massive National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration forecasting centers. Critics charge the centers are vital to predicting the weather, and closing them as part of efforts to dismantle a widely used agency. The Department of Government Efficiency reports to Trump, but the century-old General Accountability Office reports on government efficiency to Congress. The agency's head, Gene Dodaro, says their newly updated high-risk list can help trim the fat.
It's also helpful for the administration, particularly a new administration coming in, that highlights what we think to be the greatest risk of fraud, waste, abuse, and mismanagement in the government.
This year's list includes emergency small business loans, several areas within the Department of Defense, enforcing tax laws, and cybersecurity. West Virginia's tourism industry could see declines from the state's share of the 3,500 National Park and Forest Service workers being laid off. Olivia Miller with the West Virginia Highlands Conservancy says the state's economy will suffer from fewer people running and cleaning up campsites, especially in the summer.
Public lands have an enormous economic impact in our state, bringing in around $9 billion annually and supporting about 91,000 jobs. Many communities are built around outdoor recreation and tourism.
Speaker Mike Johnson says he wants a clean continuing resolution without policy writers as Congress works to avoid a possible government shutdown. His efforts face skeptical Democrats and Republican hardliners seeking deep budget cuts in a very narrowly divided House. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6, it's Transpositive PDX, then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 42. Tomorrow's weather will be partly cloudy with a high of 55. Today in history, in 1933, Francis Perkins becomes U.S. Secretary of Labor under President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Perkins was the first female member of the U.S. Cabinet. The quote of the day is from American artist and author of The Artist's Way, Julia Cameron. Born this day in 1948, she wrote, quote, "Perfectionism is not a quest for the best. It is a pursuit of the worst in ourselves, the part that tells us that nothing we do will ever be good enough, that we should try again. No, we should not. Focused on process, our creative life retains a sense of adventure. Focused on product, the same creative life can feel foolish or barren." Indigenous activist Winona LaDuc gave a talk at the University of Oregon this week with a key takeaway: corporations and Trump are trying to disrupt protectors of Native interests. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Longtime activist Winona LaDuc says powerful corporations and the Trump administration are trying to eliminate dissent and disrupt Native American interests. As Brian Bull reports, she visited the University of Oregon Monday, fresh from observing the start of a trial against Greenpeace.
LaDuc An Anishinaabe tribal member from Minnesota's White Earth Reservation says the powerful Energy Transfer Corporation has taken Greenpeace to a district court trial for multiple reasons.
To diminish and squash any kind of civil disobedience or First Amendment rights by criminalizing criticism of big energy corporations because they're charging Greenpeace with defamation. It's called a slap suit. Strategic litigation against public participation.
LaDuc adds the case will be determined by jury in North Dakota's Martin County, which she accuses of being racist and biased towards energy development companies. It's all part of a larger concern Native environmentalists have as President Trump continues to slash federal agencies and revisit his environmental agenda. In his first term, Trump cut protections on certain areas deemed sacred or important to tribes.
Widespread mayhem is what we're seeing. I mean, and obviously things like bear's ears, everything that we have had gains on to protect sacred sites, they're going to try to roll them back, as well as just basically destabilize tribal governments and tribal communities by cuts in funding.
LaDuc says it's important for Native people to work together and protect their sovereignty, as well as food, water, and families.
Hold on. You know, this is not our first bad rodeo.
In a web statement, Energy Transfer says its lawsuit against Greenpeace is not about free speech, but activists not following the law. And the White House has explained that its actions are about eliminating waste at the federal level. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
Ahead of President Trump's address to Congress Tuesday night, a leader in urban Indian health, Linda Sunstone, is advocating for urban clinics. The CEO of First Nations Health Source will be attending the speech in Washington as a guest of Representative Melanie Stansbury of New Mexico. First Nations in Albuquerque is one of 41 urban Indian clinics in the country, which Sunstone says is an important part of the Indian Health Service system. She's advocating for the protection of IHS funding and Medicaid, and is also concerned about federal workforce reductions.
We rely heavily on having a strong IHS infrastructure to administer and oversee a lot of the funding that we receive, as well as to advocate for both the tribes and the urban communities.
The clinic provides medical, dental, and behavioral health services and traditional healing. Another effort to create Indigenous Peoples Day in Montana is underway in the state legislature. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Trexler has more.
Missoula Democratic Senator Shane Morgeau brought a bill that would recognize the holidays statewide by sharing Columbus Day. This is the sixth legislative session in a row raising the issue. In 2021 and 2023, legislators attempted to replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day, but this year, Morgeau's bill proposes the two coincide. Here's Morgeau, who's a member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes.
For all the organizers and people that I've worked with across the state, I think for them this was the best step moving forward, recognizing that other efforts we've brought to the legislative body have not passed.
Legislators who spoke in support of the bill said it struck a balance and recognized Columbus's impacts on world history as well as Indigenous peoples' impacts. The Senate gave the bill an initial vote of endorsement 48-2. In Missoula, I'm Victoria Traxler.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
More than 500 mass shootings were reported in the U.S. last year. A new program in Denver aims to prevent targeted violence before it happens by making people aware of the early indicators. Eric Galatas has more.
Last year, the U.S. had more than 500 mass shootings, and a new program launched in Denver hopes to prevent targeted violence before it happens. All Health Network is a nonprofit behavioral health center that serves all patients, regardless of their ability to pay. Chief Clinical Officer Jen Bach says her team can intervene the moment that direct threats of violence or violent behaviors are witnessed and reported.
We can step in and work with community providers to identify and decrease that risk. The goal is to get people support so that we can increase overall community safety.
Just 5% of mass shootings are related to severe mental illness, according to researchers at Columbia University. Other factors play a bigger role, such as a history of financial and legal problems, challenges coping with anger and stress, nihilism, and a desire for notoriety, especially among young men. Those wishing to request a targeted violence prevention training can send an email to tvp@allhealthnetwork.org. Rebecca Sarah Rickard was certified through the Department of Homeland Security's National Threat Evaluation and Reporting Office. She says people closest to individuals often don't believe they could harm others and overlook threats. But she says it's important to take signs of potential violence seriously.
If you see a sudden change in how your child is dressing that might seem like this is really unusual for them, ask them what's going on, what's fueled the change, and basically just getting as much detail as possible.
Bach believes education is key to reducing targeted violence. She points to the success achieved by national and state campaigns that helped raise awareness about the signs and symptoms of potential suicide.
This training helps with signs and symptoms of possible violence. And so getting the word out can really help overall for early intervention and increasing community safety.
This is Eric Galatis for the Colorado News Connection.
Now we go to global citizen commentary from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. He says the disastrous Trump-Zelensky meeting revealed how drastically U.S. policy in Europe has changed from the embrace of NATO to the embrace of Russia, with Ukraine largely abandoned except for its presumed mineral wealth. In his view, it will be up to Ukraine's European supporters to provide security while America retreats. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Imagine that during World War II, at the height of Nazi Germany's Blitz of Britain, President Roosevelt had invited Prime Minister Winston Churchill to Washington and humiliated him with derisive comments about Britain's looming defeat and failure to thank the president for U.S. support. Unthinkable, of course, but that's exactly what happened when Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky visited Washington and had to endure Donald Trump's appalling interrogation. Today's headlines speak of a collision and a blow-up between the two leaders, but it was far more than that. It marked an historic American retreat from Europe and from international responsibility. Whether by design or circumstance, the Trump-Zelensky meeting was a setup for failure. The planned signing ceremony for a one-sided minerals deal descended into an argument, almost a shouting match, something never before seen in the Oval Office. It began with J.D. Vance's assertion that diplomacy was the path to peace. Zelensky challenged that, noting how untrustworthy Putin has been in the past when agreements were signed. That led to a heated exchange during which both Vance and Trump told Zelensky he was being disrespectful of the Oval Office and had not said thank you to the U.S. Actually, CNN counted 33 times that Zelensky has thanked the U.S. for its support. Trump told Zelensky, quote, "You're not really in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. You're gambling with World War III. You're either going to make a deal or we're out," Trump threatened. "And if we're out, you'll fight it out, and I don't think it's going to be pretty." After Zelensky left the meeting, Trump said it was meaningful, but that Zelensky, quote, "is not ready for peace. He can come back when he is ready for peace." Well, ready for a just peace, not peace at any price. A joint news conference planned for after the meeting was canceled. While Trump and Vance will never waver in believing that Zelensky was ungrateful and should have kowtowed to the president, theirs was a disgraceful performance. The leader of a country that has endured 3 years of bombardment, enormous losses of life and economy, and Putin's war crimes should not be treated as a supplicant. For Trump to remind Zelensky of the weakness of his position, "I know," said Ukraine's president, and then to expect him to accept terms imposed by the U.S. and Russia is entirely unacceptable, and another example of Trumpian appeasement. After the meeting, Zelensky said on Fox News that he regretted the angry exchange but would not apologize, saying he wanted Trump to be more on our side. For now, the minerals deal is off the table. It should be, since not only is it far too favorable to the U.S., it also turns out to be far more complicated than initially presented. For one thing, Ukraine's supposed wealth in rare earths and other valuable minerals may be considerably exaggerated. Some experts say that at best, the reserves remain to be determined, and the costs of extraction could be monumental. Moreover, some mines are in Russian-controlled territory. The Russians have apparently offered a deal for U.S. ownership. That would mean U.S. mining in occupied land, another heavy blow to Ukrainian sovereignty. In Trump's view, the minerals deal is supposed to substitute for a military commitment to Ukraine's security. The idea is that Russians would not dare attack, knowing that U.S. contractors were busy mining for Ukraine's lithium. But that's hardly a security commitment. Rather, it's an excuse for non-involvement. At his first cabinet meeting, Trump said, "I'm not going to provide security guarantees beyond very much. We're going to have Europe do that." In short, Ukraine cannot count on the U.S. to backstop Europe, an enormous policy shift that leaves any Ukraine-Russia peace agreement likely to fail. Nearly every European leader rallied behind Zelensky. All issued statements in support of him, in direct contrast with fulsome Republican support of Trump. A senior Ukrainian official said Zelensky spoke to French President Emmanuel Macron, NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, and President of the European Council Antonio Costa after he left the White House, describing all the conversations as supportive of the Ukrainian leader. Ursula von der Leyen, President of the European Commission, told Zelensky, "Be strong, be brave, be fearless. You are never alone, dear President." Germany's Chancellor Friedrich Merz said his country would always support Ukraine. "We must never confuse aggressor and victim in this terrible war," he said. Only Hungary's Viktor Orban took Trump's side. Donald Trump evidently wants to return world politics to spheres of influence, with the U.S. in control of the Americas, China predominant in Asia, and Russia the principal power in Europe. With U.S.-Russia relations moving toward normalcy, and Israel in the driver's seat in the Middle East, all it takes to realize Trump's vision is for China to bend to Trump on trade. Principles, values, and commitments are out the window. Pure self-interest in a world run by autocrats is all that matters. What can possibly go wrong? I'm Mel Gertal for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Tuesday, March 4th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertoff and Dave Johnson. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Suzanne Potter, Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, and Mike Moan. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KABU Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson. All of our KABU programs, including the KABU Evening